Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History FM. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the zoo, the Crypto Zoo. It's Alex Hearn here, your host, and my co-host is Jeff Stewart. I see he's on the line, too. I'm juggling two things. We're going to bring Jeff in right now. We're waiting for our guest to call in, Mitch Waite. Jeff's on the line. Tonight, we have a great guest, and we kind of dabbled in this a little bit at the end of the last show. We have Mitch Waite on, scheduled to be on tonight. He should be calling in any minute. I think we told him to call in at 9:05, right, Jeff?
I believe we did.
Yeah. So he's usually, you know, military, pretty prompt, so he'll be right on schedule. I was having a couple of logging problems, so I think we got pretty much started on time. But it's usually the way it happens is I get some kind of problem when I'm trying to log in. Rebooted the computer a half hour ago or so, ready. But that's the par for the course with going on the air live. What's new in the world of cryptozoology, or specifically since tonight's show deals with Bigfoot? Bigfoot, if you've got anything, Jeff. I know there's something going on. Michael Merchant sent me a link to some videos that he's made with the Utah sighting witnesses. That's a pretty cool incident. I don't know much about it, though, because I've been so busy. Maybe you do. And what else is going on? Anything? You got stuff going on, Jeff?
Actually, you know, I'm with you on the Utah stuff. I've been so busy of late that Michael sent me a link, and I feel bad because I haven't had a chance to really check it out. Around here in East Texas, I've been talking to Brandon Garrett, research group. We're trying to plan a little research expedition after the first of the year. Going to try to get out there with those guys and see what we can't get up. And should make for a good weekend. Other than that, around here, things have been pretty quiet. We've actually had a few sightings of cats, you know, our large cats. No black ones right now, but we have had a few cougar sightings, in which here in East Texas, that's about as rare as Bigfoot, and been trying to chase those down a little bit. Other than that, it's just normal time of year. This time of year, hunting season is going full swing, and you know, whenever you get a lot of people in the woods, Bigfoot tends to and I don't blame him. You know, when you get a bunch of guys in the woods with guns, I mean, that's, even though I'm a hunter myself, sometimes I cringe.
Actually, there was an accidental shooting involving one of my, I wouldn't say heroes, but childhood sports players that I looked up to a little bit, you know, just like you would any other sports player. He was never a goal scorer for the Bruins, but he was known to be like maybe one of the toughest players that ever played the sport of hockey. He's known for challenging the whole bench of another team. And he'd be, you know, roughly right about our age, might be a little older than me, you know, 55, pushing 60, something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's only, you know, my age-ish. Stan Jonathan, hockey player, was involved in an accidental shooting in Canada. And he actually shot and killed somebody. And, you know, basically just kind of carelessly shooting, you know. Didn't do it on purpose by any means. Even the victim's brother says that. But he was careless, and, you know, what he was shooting at was not a deer. And, you know, he killed the man's brother, and it's an unfortunate incident. But that's the type of stuff that happens this time of year if you're out in the woods. And you don't have orange on, you take your life in your hands. So a lot of hunters, they don't want to wear the orange because the hunters can see them and so can't the deer. And, you know, Mitch and I go out to the woods and, you know, we're not exactly hunting, so we don't have our hunter orange on sometimes. Now, a lot of the times we do have Mitch's T-shirts, which, you know, we'll wear the orange, red, or yellow. But, you know, even that's not enough sometimes, you know. Even with the orange hat, the orange vest, and the orange gloves, whatever, you can sleeves, you can still get, you know, shot at. And, you know, it's a scary, scary situation. So you got to remember to take care. And if you're in the area with hunters, let them know you're in there, too. You know, and if you're hunting in an area, try to let people know that are in the area that you're in there hunting. It's your obligation.
Well, here in Texas, we don't have that big of a problem because about 80% of our hunting is done on private property. There's not a there is some quite large amounts of public hunting land around where I'm at, but primarily most of it's done on private property, so we pretty much know who's lived with us.
This person was actually shot on private property. And he had a right to be there, and it sounds like Stan Jonathan had a right to be there too, but neither one knew the other was there. So it can happen, you know. But anyways, let's bring on our guest. Why don't you and him talk a little bit? I got a technical glitch I'm trying to fix here. So if I don't join in for a few seconds, I'll be listening. But, Mitch, I see you're on the line. That's your phone number. I didn't screen you because I know your number. How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. Jeff, you know Mitch well. Mitch,
yeah,
tell us about,
welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
And tell us
very much
about your recent activity there and what we talked about, and you guys enjoy each other. I'll be back as quick as I can.
Okay. Well, I guess the most recent thing that I've been up to is I've been trying to locate all the parts of an elk. I've been up in the area that I normally hunt for Bigfoot, and I ran across an elk leg. And the elk leg was severed or twisted off at the shoulder blade. It still had the shoulder blade bone on it. It was an entire leg. When I first found it, it was still bloody, and it had quite a bit of meat still left on it. So, you know, at that particular time, I was a little bit nervous about going into the thicket because I could hear tree branches breaking and so forth. And so, you know, I thought, well, you know, if it is a bear, then I don't want to get in there and tangle with a bear over his food. So, you know, when an animal is fresh in the kill, you know, it's just killed, that's not a good time to mess with its food. So, yeah.
How much would you say that it probably weighed?
Well, it was a full-sized elk, and I measured the leg out, and I believe it was 48 inches from the tip of the hoof to the shoulder bone.
So we're talking
the shoulder 30 bone.
Feet.
So probably 450-400 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't a giant elk, but it wasn't a little one by any means either.
Right, right.
So that, you know, so for something to have taken and ripped this shoulder blade, this whole shoulder, this whole paunch off of this deer, off this elk, I mean, it was, you're talking something with quite a bit of strength here. You're not, you know, and most black bears, you know, are not really huge, you know. On the large side, you know, up in Canada and places like that, you may see some 400-pound black bears. But, you know, most of the time in a region, I know, in Louisiana, Texas, around here, you know, our black bears are only in the 150-pound range.
Yeah.
How big are the black bears there where you're at?
Well, the bigger ones will get maybe 300, 350. But that's, you know, been feeding all year, and they're fattened out real good. The bear's
yeah,
up
I mean,
there right now.
I can't
now.
Even see a...
What's that?
I said I can't even see a 300-pound black bear being capable of ripping an elk shoulder completely off of a carcass like that without having to, you know, work at it quite a bit, you know, gnaw on it.
Yeah, it would have to chew on it for a while, and that's not typical of a bear. A bear's going to go for the easy stuff first.
Yeah, he's going for the soft stuff.
Yeah, it's not going to rip a leg off and take off with it. Bears typically feed on the easier stuff, and then they'll semi-cover it with pine needles and so forth, and then they'll go away. And then they'll come back when they're hungry again and eat some more. They very
right.
rarely drag something off.
Yeah, you very seldom see a bear. You know, that's just not in his behavior to take something off with him most of the time. They're, like you said, they like to, you know, feed wherever the carcass is, then they'll cover it up, and they'll return to that carcass over a period of time until, you know, they've eaten their what they want of it and move on.
Correct, correct. And that's one of the reasons why I was so bent on trying to locate the carcass. I came back several times, and I did work my way through the thickets looking for the carcass, and I didn't think it would be all that far away from where the leg was found. And I never did find the carcass. But eventually, I located all four legs. And these legs were strewn out from leg one to leg two was about a half mile. From leg one to leg three in a more easterly direction, it was about three-quarters of a mile. And then leg four was probably pretty close to three-quarters of a mile in a kind of a southeasterly direction. So they spread out. Something carried these hefty bones and legs a long ways.
Yeah, and we're talking, you know, the rear hindquarters, which we tend to call a ham, even though it's not pork. We still like the back quarter of an elk or a deer, we call it a ham. You know, the ham section of one of these animals, with hoof and all intact, would have been about twice or three times the weight of the front shoulder. So it would have weighed, gosh, you know, it might have weighed 50, 60 pounds.
That's correct. You know, quite a bit of meat on them, too. But, when I found these bones, it took me a series of several weeks to find all the bones. And those are all depicted in the YouTube links that we've posted for the viewers to look at. And it took me, you know, several weeks to find all four legs. And I combed that thicket very well. But while I was in there, I was finding piles of scat everywhere. I mean, you know, some piles were not very big, probably about a human's amount, and some was huge. You know, more on the order of a cow pie, but it wasn't like a cow pie. It was more of a soft serve type situation, you know.
Right.
And almost all of the scat was the same consistency, and it was a blackish red after it aged for a little while. There was no berries in it, no hard stuff like grass fibers or anything like that. So whatever it was eating mostly meat. And
right, you know, a lot of our listeners may not know that, you know, a high meat and blood content in the diet makes for a very, very dark, blackish-red stool. And, you know, that's very characteristic of a carnivore. You know, I mean, I know we don't see it really in our dogs and domestic dogs and things because they eat dog food, but in coyotes, bears, whenever they're feeding on primarily meat, it'll be a very dark, it'll have a hint of red to it, but it'll almost be black.
Yes. And to me, it's, you know, as I located the legs and stuff like that, and never did find the body, never did find the head, it almost looked as if there was a kill, and the kill was divided up and taken in several different directions. Kind of like it was a shared kill.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, looking at the different sizes of scat, you know, people are probably going to get tired of looking at all the scat on some of those videos. But what I was trying to show was there was a lot of it. It wasn't all from the same animal. It was, some of them were smaller, some bigger. And so I'm kind of thinking that a clan was in there working on that elk for, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks. So that's probably why I never did find the rest of the body. If I do, it'll probably be just the bones.
Right, exactly. You know, once they've eaten their fill off of it and whatever they discard, then you have other predators and scavengers that are going to come in, and they're going to pick the rest of the bones clean. And, you know, you're going to be lucky if you just find a bone.
Yeah. Now, there is one place that I have not checked yet, and I haven't really talked to too many people about this, but Alex will know about it. And there's a place called Spooky Valley. And this is a place where the cattlemen would not range their cows. And if a cow went in there, it never came out. Horses won't go in there. So if a cattleman goes in, he has to go on foot. You know, pretty spooky place.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Forest rangers hate it. They don't like working in there. But because they always get sent to work the trails alone. So, you know, they don't like going in there. Anyway, on the ridge of this valley, there, along this one particular ridge, there's piles of bones. And they're from various different animals. Never any heads or anything like that, and if I remember right, there wasn't any legs. It's always rib bones and back bones and pelvic bones. There's not, you know, and it's almost like they're posting a sign, you know, this is our territory, stay out.
Right.
I have not been brave enough to go in there. Actually, I would go in there. It's just that right now, my legs and stuff won't carry me in there because it's going to be a major hike. So I've got to get in shape, and maybe by the end of the summer, this next summer, I'll be able to actually hike in there.
I'm back,
That would be a very interesting video segment there, Mitch. Well, I know we'd all be anxious to see some footage from that hike.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Alex.
I've been here. I've been trying to working in microphone that I use and has a mute button and is up in a good vantage point to get a good signal, and I wasn't able to get that working, and it's Murphy's Law because it was working right before the show.
Well, of course.
Literally.
That's the way our good luck usually goes.
It worked, and I dialed the wrong number. I hung up and tried to dial the correct number, and it wouldn't work. It was kind of funny. But so I'm here, and I hope I sound okay. And if I drop off because my signal, you know, drops, you guys probably won't even know, so call back in as quick as possible. Been talking about Spooky Valley, I heard, Mitch. I don't think Jeff is aware of its exact location. He is aware of some of the areas that we go. He's tried calling me numerous times when I've gone up one mountain and down another. It's about, what would you think, Mitch? A full day or maybe even 2 days hike? Definitely 2 days plus with equipment. But even just to try to hike there, it's probably something that would, because it's up and down at kind of two mountains, right?
Yeah.
It would probably take a good part of, you know, I don't know if that's something you could do at night. So you'd have to do all your hiking in daylight hours. You might not be able to make both peaks and up and down in one night. So I'd probably do one a day.
Yeah, I'd probably take a day to get in and at least that to get back out, unless you were scared to death. It might not take any time at all.
We've had the ranger talk to us about it. We've had ranchers talk to us about it. It's an area that has been, you know, at one time probably somebody's property or somebody considered it their property for grazing their cattle. But what the ranchers told us is, you know, it was off to the end of Padifa 1, and when the cattle went in there, they didn't come out, so they didn't really go in there chasing them. And, you know, it was that far away that they, you know, probably weren't even sure that's where the cattle went. So it got this mysterious connotations in history, you know, with word of mouth more than anything, and probably theories. I don't think they would be in an area with, you know, where they'd see the cattle go in. There was no ranches right in there, although there are some close that I know of anyways. Mitch, was there any ranch slash homesteads in that area? I mean, I imagine there probably were some in that direction, if not in there further on. But the ones we know of, we've been to most of them, right?
Right. There's at least two homesteads that are probably within, you know, a Bigfoot's walking distance, probably a couple hours. Ours would be a lot longer. But, it would be close enough to range cattle in there, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely at least, and, you know, years ago there was roads that aren't there now, too, so, or at least that the entrances are blocked off, too, by Forest Service and Fish and Game, because, you know, the ranges get in there, so they, you know, their roads and our roads are two different things, and they're closing off 10% more every year, right? We've done a bit on that. The Forest Service is closing 10% of the roads nationwide, the forest roads, yearly, until they get to their, whatever they decide their quota is. And, you know, at that point, they'll probably make more cuts and decide that they have less people and need to close more roads. And we've seen that right in front of our eyes in and around the hot zone. We'll just call it the hot zone, although everybody that close to us knows the name of the location. We'll at least make some people have to look it up. It's south of... We'll tell them that. We've had some good awesome Arizona, too. And I think the closer points, maybe even up to Valentine Ridge, would almost consider part of the hot zone, because we think that is definitely an area where they could probably go between.
Yeah,
Mitch, tell us about the, let's see, well, our very first trip in there, we found the first kill zone. It was a turkey and a couple of small critters we found. And tell us about what led you maybe to the first nesting location. Because I think that's maybe the first video I linked to was the nesting slash ambush point. Those nesting locations and the bedding location that I think it's David lays down in the second video, and then we'll segue into the big, you know, all the kill zones and specifically this elk kill that you found.
Yes, basically, we've been camping in a normal campground. Because the roads are too rough for my trailer to get into and so forth. And plus the campgrounds are nice and have picnic tables and outhouses and stuff like that. Well,
still
we have...
Rural. Still,
what's
still
that?
Primitive. It's still primitive and pretty rural. At the campgrounds, the two or three that you use for base camp, they're about 6,500, 6,000 feet up. So they're you know, former ranch and private land that the Forest Service has taken over. It's a locked valley, and we've had activity down there all the way up to the peak at both Aztec Peak and Reynolds Peak, right? And we've even brought others that have had activity and stuff happen there. We don't need to mention any names, but... the various programs or news agencies that we've brought up there. And that's higher up at about 76, 90 feet, I think, one of the peaks. But even the base camp you use is pretty a rugged area. And, you know, so I don't want people to think, I mean, the nearest village or town is 20-something miles in each direction, and that's, you know, a town you can count the people on, you know, on a small list at the very most. And then it's another 40 miles before you get to a major town in either direction. So the rural area, it's not something you're going to come across in your everyday travel.
Right. Well, you wanted to know what led me to the nests and so forth. As we were camping in that particular campground, we've had several visits, as you know, Alex, you've been there. And they always seem to take the same pathway down off the mountain to get to where we're at. For them, they come down off through a mountain pass and drop right down into the camp area. For us, we have to go around the long way on the road, and that takes, probably 20 miles. So they have basically an area that they traverse, and I believe it's mostly juveniles that are coming off the mountain. They're coming down to look for goodies at the campsites. Kind of almost like bears do, but these guys only do it at nights. Typically, the activity will start at about 11 o'clock and last until just before daybreak. And there'll be kind of like a call for them to all come home from the mountaintop above. And that's when all the activity ceases and it's done. So we've been following that that area, or trying to figure out what trails they're using to traverse this area. And in doing so, that's when we ran across the nest. I believe the title of that video is Bigfoot Nest and Intriguing Footage. And in that, you'll actually see me climb into the nest. And when I climb into the nest, it's dark. You know, I plugged up the hole, and so I've got my video camera going, and it's got a real weak IR light, so I'm more paying attention to the structure than I am as to what's in the back of the nest. And until I look at my camera, and that's when I'm kind of almost nose to nose with a baby Bigfoot. Now, I've caught a lot of flack over the years as to why I didn't kill it or try to wrestle it down or poke it with a stick or something like that, you know. Basically, to me, babies are off limits. Any and all babies, human babies, deer, you know, all babies are off limits to me. And plus the fact is, if there's a baby there, mom's not too far away. And if I would have started harassing that animal enough to where it started squealing, mom would have come on the run and ripped us a new one.
Yeah, no matter what it was, whether it was a Bigfoot or a bear or a deer, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
You know what was neat, and what I was going to say, you're watching the video, and you're listening to your narration, and, excuse me, just as I do, most of the time you're doing this, and you make much, much, many, many, many more videos than me, but you're not rehearsing any of this, and I've even recorded you in my videos as you're making yours, you know, not aimed at you, but I can hear you in the background doing the exact same thing. So I know you make every one of these off the cuff. And as you're crawling into this hole, if you watch the video, because the camera has the IR light, even though it's not that good, and your eyes, of course, are human and don't have any tepida lipidum, and so you don't have night vision, and you're not looking at the camera, just as you said a moment ago, you can actually see that something's in the back of that hole on the camera before you notice it. And it's really a cool video, and I don't have a link to this one up right now, but let me click on it while I'm talking, because we had it in an email today, so I do have it there. I just didn't have it open before we started the show.
Yeah, if anybody wants to look it up, it's called Bigfoot Nest Intriguing Footage under Susan Farnsworth on YouTube. So, you know, if they can't find the link, then they can go there and look it up.
And it's a great one. There it is, Bigfoot Nest, very intriguing footage. And it's under the Susan Farns YouTube page. And that's shot for Susan Farnsworth, and which is some of the books that you and your wife write. You write under that name, and some you write under your own name for the mining and stuff. But your wife, Susan, does a lot of the research with you, so it seems, for whatever reason, she's written the first couple of Bigfoot books. And your YouTube page is named Susan Farns, no spaces, without the worth. So go to YouTube, search for Susan Farns. That'll pull up Mitch and his wife's web page / YouTube page and their videos. And they got some great videos, too. Another good one, and you know, I can't believe I didn't link to this one. I'm sorry, I was rushing and doing Thanksgiving stuff today. Is the Bigfoot in our camp. Now, and you know, I want to say that Zach Baggins jokingly accused me of being the person that snuck into your camp and into your cooler. I was not on that trip. That was one of our earlier trips and one of the first trips I didn't go on. But I take that as a compliment because the creature in that video is much thinner than I am and much taller. So I'd love to be taller and thinner. Tell us about the Bigfoot in your camp video, Mitch. That's a great one, and I think it's one everybody knows in the genre.
Yeah, it's you know, I've always had the feeling that we don't know what comes into our camps at night when we're asleep. And so basically what I was doing was putting game cameras out to watch to see what kind of visitors we get during the night. Well, I put one of my older technology cameras out overlooking the table that had a cooler, you know, an ice chest sitting there. And the cooler was full of steaks and sausage and Diet Cokes and water and, you know, eggs and all kinds of good stuff like that. And something comes in and walks over, opens up the lid, pulls out a Diet Coke, takes a foil of chocolate chip cookies off the table, turns to leave, and then almost like it forgot something, it turns right back around and reaches back and grabs something else, and then walks out of view. Now, it's very dark because that was pushing the maximum distance for that particular technology camera. I've since got better cameras, but, you know, looking at it, we've enhanced it and got as good of photos out of it as we can, and you can actually see that the lantern behind it is turned on very low. And its head is just under that lantern, but that lantern is actually hung on a tree as high up as I could reach. And I'm
We can barely reach that to swing the handle of the lantern on it, right?
Right.
And I'm like maybe an inch taller than you. I have to tiptoe and kind of swing it to get the lanterns up there for you when I'm with you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can do it, but, you know, it's not something you just reach up and do. You kind of got to do a swinging motion. Everybody knows what I mean. And another thing was, well, not another thing, but the reason the cameras were aimed that way is the previous trips, we had had lots of activity happen where we just kind of thought something had gone through the camp, and then we found footprints. We've had, you know, different piles of moss taken off the trees, rolled into a ball, and stuck in front of one of the tent doors. So you would have had a trip on the thing to get in there at night and not see it. And, you know, come out, it was in their way. And then, you know, we've had the other people that go up there, and I invited Victor tonight. He's working, so he couldn't call in, but I told him you were on, and he was welcome to call. And I always do stuff like that. Everybody's always welcome to call. I remind different people different weeks. Last Joe, we had a surprise call from Tom. I reminded everybody in my email list that the show was on and they were welcome to call, about 40 people, and he was the only one that did, but that's typical for Tom. But Victor, well, he's been up at the area close to the peak, has even, has had numerous incidents of the same, and they haven't recorded anybody on video, but they actually do have a couple of sound files of something running through the camp and actually banging on one of the trucks or whacking one of the trucks as it goes by. So that's pretty neat too, and that's right in line with what we're talking about here. You would notice that stuff happening. We started leaving lights on and putting up the cameras to kind of allow the lights to record what the cameras got, because the IR on the cameras weren't that great. I don't know if it helped or not. I think it did. The only way to tell is to see the same video without that. I just don't think you would have been able to see whatever it was as good, because the IR in that camera wasn't that great. But whatever it is naked, or at least doesn't have any clothes on. Might have something else. You can see its IR footprint. And I don't mean its footprint, I mean the outline of its whole body. You can see that it doesn't have any, lines of differentiation. Did I say that right? Between its clothes, like it would shirts, pants, or bare-chested to a pants, or, so whoever this is, or whatever this is, doesn't even have underwear on. And we know you were with two people at the time. One was Preston. I'm not sure if the other one was Shannon or Dave or who was with you that trip.
It was David.
But David, neither one of those guys are 8 feet tall, right?
No.
So they're closer to your height and my height, which is pretty neat. And, if it was one of them, they would have walked straight to your tent. And I think your tent is off in the direction the camera's shooting from, and whatever it is goes off the other way, which would be, towards the apple tree, I'm guessing?
Actually, it's going down the fence line towards the concrete trough.
So that trailer goes down that way.
But yeah, you're correct, and if you look at the photos, the enhanced photos, you see that it's got very muscular biceps, and you look at the legs, and the legs are not proportional to being human. They're too short in the thighs, or in the calves. It's definitely. To me, it definitely looks primate. So, not quite like a gorilla, but did I lose y'all?
Nope, I'm listening.
Okay.
No, I agree. It looks very muscular. I think you can agree that it's close to the lantern, even if there's some, foreground, background thing going on. It's pretty close in height to the lantern, because there's not that much room there between the table and the tree that the lantern's on, so it can only be a matter of a couple of feet away from the tree. It's walking between the table and the tree and the table. You got the cooler on and such, and the picnic table is right to its left, I think, in the video. So you got the stuff on the bins, just like we always do, next to that tree, I guess. Before we run out of time, and I want to get in a little bit about your UFO and mining books too, so don't let me forget. and your Superstition Mountain stuff, because that will intrigue everybody. We could do a couple of shows on each one of those subjects alone. But before we forget, tell us about the elk kill and, you know, how you came upon it in the beginning, the first leg, and right on through, I guess you found all four legs now, right?
Yes, and I did tell at the very beginning that we, you know, the circumstances and finding the four legs. What I didn't tell them about was the fresh kill, the blood pool. That was the last thing that I'd found. I found about 30 feet from the third leg was a very, very fresh blood pool. The blood was still red, and it was still running down the tree. There was a big puddle at the base of the tree. Then there was spots or splatter marks. And CSIs would call it high-speed splatter. It's almost as if something took an elk or a deer and wrapped it around the tree to break its back or something. But again, no body. Whatever it was mortally wounded because there was so much blood there that, you know, it wasn't going to live very long.
Now, it didn't look like the legs were chopped off. And I believe you said it didn't really look like they were eaten off either, not to be gruesome. Now, one of the things, and this is a good way because I think I'm monopolizing the conversation here, one of the great ways to get Jeff into the conversation, and before I do that, I better make sure he's still on the line, but I think he is, is that Jeff's an expert huntsman, critter catcher, and in fact, last week, he caught at least shot whatever, at least two hogs when I last talked to him. He might have got more by before the end of the week, and he might have got some this week. But what would a poacher do? If a poacher was taking an elk, he would take just the best parts, right? Jeff, tell us, you know, what are your thoughts? Not so much what you think happened, but what on earth could kill an animal like that? And, you know, if there's any chance it could be some partly a poacher. And I guess, you know, if Bigfoot's killing elk without a license, he's a poacher too. Actually, it looks like he must have, there he is, looks like he must have dropped off just like I suspected and then logged back in and I didn't catch it. He was on mute. Sorry, Jeff.
Yeah,
sorry,
I got my old phone dropped the call. But, you know, what I look at is, you know, Mitch and I touched on it a little bit before, you know, the size of the bears in the area, you know, and a bear's normal behavior with a kill, you know, and that doesn't fit with picking up legs, you know, either shoulders or hams off of an elk and carrying them in four different directions. You know, that just doesn't fit with a bear, what a bear does. Now, coyotes, things like that, now you're talking about a coyote, you're talking about a 25 pound animal, you know, he's not going to carry a 50-pound elk ham 3/4 of a mile.
He's going to take one of the limbs, and he's going to gnaw on it, bone and all. And these were,
yeah.
I would say even a poacher would be taking one of these haunches, because I'll tell you, it looked like a really good Sunday dinner, the first one.
But the thing is, with a poacher, you know, when you have a poacher, he's not going to take bone, leg, and all. What a poacher is going to do, a poacher is going to kill that animal. First thing he's going to do, he's going to fillet the back straps out of this animal, which basically that's what a back strap is. Back strap is the filet mignon here. So what he's going to do, he's going to cut the filet off the back. Then he's going to take the meatiest part of the animal, which would be the ham, and he's going to cut what we tend to call the money muscle. He's going to cut the money muscles off of this ham, because that's the most tender, delicate, the best part of the ham. The shoulders, most of your poachers aren't even going to fool with a shoulder because they're bony, they're gristly, they're tough, they're stringy. You know, you really got to do some cooking or grinding on a shoulder to make it worth eating. So he's going to grab probably, you know, 20, 30 pounds of deboned meat, throw it into a backpack, and he's going to haul tail out of there. He's not going to take the time to carry, you know, one leg in one direction, one in another, you know, and so forth and so on. So, you know, we do have some crazy humans out there, but I just don't think that, you know, somebody packed all this way into the wilderness area there and killed an elk and then decided I'm going to screw with somebody's head and towed all these limbs in different directions. The only thing I can see is, like Mitch and I touched on, Mitch brought up a big point there. You know, if a family group, maybe, of creatures, you know, got together, killed this animal, and everybody took a piece and went in their own direction.
That could be. That's a pretty good theory.
Yeah, you know, Mitch touched on that, you know, and I thought he had a really good point there. You know, bears, like Mitch and I talked about, bears, they kill it. They're going to sit there and they're going to go after the softest, most easy to get at portions first. They're going to eat their fill. Then they're going to cover the animal up as best they can, hide it, whatever they can do. Then they're going to go off, and they're not going to go very far. They're going to go off. They're going to find them a place. They're going to lay up. They're going to sit there, and they're going to digest. And as soon as they get through digesting, they're going to go take a big dump. Then they're going to come back. They're going to eat their fill again. They're going to do this time and time again until they have either eaten the entire animal up or until, you know, other predators or scavengers come in and clean the carcass up or whatever. You know, they're going to hang around in that area. They're not going to take pieces and leave with it.
And the same with, I would think, the same with any large cat. We have been warned of cats up there, you know, jaguar or mountain lion.
Now, cats will take, you know, certain, you know, they will take an animal and they will take it back. Like if they've got kittens, they'll take meat back to the kittens. But, you know, you really would be hard-pressed to find where a cat would take one limb three-quarters of a mile this way, one three-quarters of a mile that way, and so forth with the limbs, you know. And then you'd say, well, maybe it was four different cats, but now if anybody that knows how cats operate, cats have territories. And most of the time you don't have four different cats operating in a large cats like cougars operating in a very small area where they would all four cats be on one kill. You know, male cats have several hundred mile radius that they patrol, and if they find another male cat in that area, they'll either beat them down and send them out or they'll kill them. Females have a smaller range.
That's true unless they're a young group that's still together and developing.
Right.
I do.
But in that case, if they're still together, then they wouldn't all be going in different directions, taking pieces and leaving with them.
And neither would coyotes, I would think. Neither would coyotes.
I have a little more information about the incident. While I was up there, there was a group of law enforcement agents up there camping in the same area I was. And one of them was a tracker for the sheriff's department. And he agreed to go in there with me one day. And I took him in and I showed him the first leg. And we looked at the scat, the amount of scat and so forth. And all of a sudden, he just kept saying, well, I don't know what it is, but it's big. And then he all of a sudden decided,
he wasn't going to hang around, so he left.
And, you know, we've had, and that's one of the areas that had, it's been affected. We've had a very, very bad drought year this year, probably the worst in the 8 years I've been here. And we were just coming, I think the first year I was here, we came out of a drought. So this is the first year it's been bad. One of the big easy access lakes, that's kind of where they've dammed up a river or a wash, dried up this year, the first time in 3-4 years. A lot of the lakes up north were way down. Black Canyon was all but dried up, except for the deepest holes. Black Canyon Lake, you know, there's no way to launch a boat unless it was, you know, something you could walk to the water. The water was 200 yards from the boat ramp itself. So except for a canoe, and you had to walk that, you know, a couple hundred yards, you couldn't get into this lake. Many of the others were below the ramp also. So it was a bad year, and, you know, we've had 15 bear attacks in the past 8 years up until this year. And as of June, we had 3 bear attacks in the Payson area alone. So it was a year where the animals were doing crazy things because of the lack of water. That could be. Jeff, get some background noise there. And so it was a very bad year. So that, you know, it could have some common sense answers, but none of them seem to fit. So, you know, to be realistic, we'll throw that out there too. But truthfully, if Jeff can't figure out a realistic way that got there, I'm thinking other people would have a pretty hard time doing it too. You know, and you and I are just as tough a skeptic as Jeff is, Mitch. Tell us quickly, we're running out of time, but I wanted you to get it in, and we'll bring you back as soon as possible. Tell us about some of your superstitions, UFO, and mining writings and such. And, you know, there's so much more we could get into, but tell us about that, since people can go buy the books. And,
okay.
And you know, learn what you're talking about.
All right. I do publish books and DVDs on my exploits. I have done a lot of research on the Lost Esmond's gold mine. I've done a lot of expeditions into the mountains, and basically, I believe I've come up with a deciphering the Peralta Stone maps, which is supposed to show the location of the blessed treasure, which is a Jesuit's treasure. I found the priest supposed to be standing on. So those, all of my books and DVDs are offered through Amazon.com. And you can go into most local bookstores and request the books or DVDs, and they'll order them for you. Most of them are written under my name, Mitch Waite, or Susan Farnsworth, my wife. And I do carry a few other people's books. As far as UFOs go, my job in the Air Force, I was one of 5 space officers that worked in U.S. Space Command in NORAD Cheyenne Mountain. My particular job was to assess anything that came into our atmosphere or left our atmosphere as to the mission and threat to the United States. I had to report directly to the sitting general, who basically would make a decision as to whether or not to call the president or scramble jets or whatever. So I have some pretty spooky stories to tell about that. You know, and so So there is a book called Have You Ever Seen a UFO by Susan Farnsworth. That is basically some interviews with some of the people that I worked with. And they tried to keep, well, they did keep it all unclassified, but they told about a lot of the incidents that happened during my stay there in the mountain. So that's basically it. You can find a list of books and so forth on www.mogionmonster.com, which is my website. I've got photos there, stories, videos, you name it, I got it, about the Mogion Arizona's Bigfoot, so forth.
One of the things I didn't get to, actually I didn't get it into some of the posts I made right before showtime. I added another half a dozen posts to different websites right before showtime, and I added it in. But in my first dozen or so posts, I didn't mention that you also write for Examiner.com, as I do. So Google or search for Mitch Waite on Facebook at Examiner.com, excuse me, at YouTube. Google or search for Susan Farnsworth or Susan Farns with no space on YouTube or the internet will bring you to all your stuff. I've done it, so I know. And of course, the best place, and that's, you know, that's if you go brain dead or something, the best place to get to your stuff is through, as you said, MogionMonster.com, and that's your Southwest Publications page. Has all your books, all your how-to, I guess they're books too, they're smaller. Really neat stuff, though. Lots and lots of information. You and I have been lucky enough to have some wild stuff happen. We actually got to witness, and it was really incredible that I got to witness such a thing with you, with your credentials and background. But we saw a missile launch from the desert and then recorded it, both of us, and you can hear each other talking in the other one's recording. And at least in my video, and I might even have this wrong, at I think about 29 seconds or 41 seconds, both come into my mind, something crosses paths with the missile that we think was possibly a UFO, or at least I do and a lot of people do. So that's pretty neat. You and I have had not only Bigfoot incidents and some weird nighttime noises and such, crypto stuff happened, but we've also had some UFO activity and paranormal activity or conspiracy activity together. So we'll get into that in future shows if you want to come back, and we hope you do. Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd love to.
Excellent, excellent. So get to Mitch Waite on Facebook, on Google, Mitch Waite. You'll get to him at YouTube, at MogionMonster.com, at Amazon, at Southwest Publications. And, you know, request the books at your local stores and get the books in the stores. And, you know, request Mitch as a guest on some of these other shows, because Mitch would make a great guest. Even on that bigger show that starts, I guess, on some stations right now. Jeff, do you want to say goodbye to everybody?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Mitch for coming on. It was a great show. Appreciate you, Mitch. I really enjoyed talking with you, and want to thank everybody who tuned in tonight and tell y'all happy Thanksgiving, and everybody has a very safe holiday season. Everybody that's traveling tomorrow to loved ones' houses, watch out for your fellow man, because times they don't watch out for you. And just thank everybody, and good night.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Well said, Jeff. You know, and before I let everybody go, it's a big, huge night, weekend, holiday for Bigfoot activity, too. you know, this is the biggest, most active time of the year at cabin investigation that we have going on in Seligman. It's a active time in the hot zone. We love to get in there this time of year. Victor is going this weekend. Mitch is going very shortly. This is the anniversary of the thermal and the flare that we recorded in 2008. You know, you get to that, you can check it out on my Facebook page, Alex Hearn, Facebook, AZCRO Facebook. And you can get it, I think you can get to that through my YouTube page too, which is either under Alex or AZCRO Alex, I believe. But it's one of the most incredible thermal image photos that I've seen. So it's the anniversary of taking that 4 years ago this week. So check it out, everybody, and have a great holiday. Mitch, thank you for coming on. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome, and we'll have you back as soon as possible. Good night, everybody.
All right, good night.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History FM. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.LiveParanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now. Join in on the fun.
LP Web Design, 100% custom websites, entry pages, Twitter backgrounds, banners, and more. For more information, please visit LiveParanormal.com, the official web designer of the stars.